Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Yes, this is Do Go On, the show where we talk about something that we find interesting, and the we in that we is myself, Dave Warnocky, and I'm here, as always, with Mr. Matthew Stewart. Hello, Matt.
Hi, Dave. How do you do?
I am doing good, thank you, my man.
Do you go on?
I will go on to introduce our other co-host, which is Jess Perkins at the other end of the table from me. Hello, Jess.
Hello, boys. How are we?
Jeez, you've sort of pulled back the curtain there by saying that we're sitting at a table.
What do you think most people think that we're standing up?
Yeah,
at a bar, wearing tuxedos.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm wearing a tuxedo. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, you always overdress for podcast recordings.
I know. We're recording this on a Monday morning.
Yeah.
So the time where everyone is at a peak for the week. Everyone's spirits are at an all-time high.
Absolutely.
Mainly because we're not at an office 9-to-5 job. So there you go. Sorry if you are listening to this at your office.
But also, not sorry. Sucked in!
Yeah, we are here, and this is the show, well, I will explain if you have not heard before, where one of us, one of the three, finds a topic that we find interesting. We prepare a report on that topic, and then we try and educate the other two. And this week, it is the first report from Jess.
Yep, it's my turn.
Your turn to go on to educate. And the thing about this is that Matt and I have no idea what you are about to teach us about.
You have no idea. And I need to say a couple of things to start with. You both warned me. You were like, it's a lot of work, Jess. And I was like, yeah, I got this.
Yeah, that's right. We wrote our reports. We also thought, oh yeah, 2 hours on Wikipedia, we'll be able to nail this. It's quite a lot. So please,
it's so much work.
Tell your friends if you're listening to this, because we put too much effort into it.
Yeah, and now I'm a little anxious because I'm worried that I've missed things. Basically, I'm worried you're going to ask questions that I won't have the answers to.
The problem with most of the topics we choose, or probably most topics in the world, is that there's always more.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you keep going down the rabbit holes chasing new facts you find, and they unveil.
Yeah, it's more and more.
It's like
unveil? Unveil.
Yeah,
there's a ribbon cutting ceremony. Here's another fact you didn't know about. Unveil's wrong, right?
There's an opening ceremony.
Yeah, okay, good.
But the way you're going down the rabbit hole, like you describe fact finding like a drug addiction.
Yeah. It kind of is.
Come on, guys, let's raise some money to fight this terrible, terrible affliction.
And once
I like how you think of rabbit holes as a drug addiction. I think of them as like rabbit holes.
Huh. No, but you know,
doesn't it go back to Alice in Wonderland?
Yeah.
Isn't that where the rabbit hole is? But that is drugs.
And,
that opens up a whole world, doesn't it?
Lewis Carroll
She's not literally just in a hole, is she?
No.
Stuck there and her granddad has to come and get her out. She's
No, I never liked that movie. I never saw it all the way through. Is that what happened?
A lot of crazy stuff.
Granddad, I'm stuck in the hole.
Yeah, a lot of crazy stuff that you would think about on drugs. That is actually, that's so it is, happens, definitely.
Yeah, yeah, munchies. There's the eat me stuff.
Oh, yeah.
What about all the things that there's a like talking animals and things like that? Yeah. That's more
talking caterpillar.
Yep.
There's Tweedledee and Tweedledee dumpling. That's not right.
That's not right.
You're thinking about food.
Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Tweedledee dumpling.
Tweedledee dumpling. That's what you have when you have the munchies. You have the Tweedledee dumpling.
Tweedledee dumpling. I'm actually going to change your name in my phone to Tweedledee dumpling. It's going to be very confusing when
I
go to message you.
Tweedledee then?
Absolutely. Tweedledee.
We make such a great team.
You little cuties. You will understand once I tell you what my topic is, you'll understand that I have bitten off more than I can chew. But I'm
the history of mankind.
A summary. So just know that I have done my best and I've tried to find all the most interesting and most important facts. Okay? Just we could do this together.
Look, I believe in you.
Thank you, Matt. I needed that.
Hey, Jess, you know how we like to start this off, though, is with a sort of vague, irrelevant question.
Yep. And, and I feel like mine might give it away, but here we go. What would you say was the biggest musical act in history?
Musical act.
Or like...
Ooh.
Musical act. Is this like...
It would come to mind for me, Elvis Presley.
Okay.
Mozart.
Really?
Oh, is that what you're thinking? Oh, you're thinking classical composers. A Ludwig van Beethoven, a Mozart. Someone, what about...
biggest all time.
The Beatles.
Boom!
Oh, Beatles.
Biggest selling.
Yeah.
Are we talking about the Beatles?
We're talking about the Beatles.
That's really great.
That is really great.
Yeah.
Who is your favourite band?
Favourite band?
Yeah.
Oh. The Beatles would be up there, I reckon.
Are they actually your favourite band?
I get my top three is Beatles, Tism, and Pantera.
Ah, cool.
They are so different.
They are really different, vastly different.
I think Tism are definitely have some influence from the Beatles. I don't know if they returned any influence because the timelines didn't quite connect. But there's heaps of Beatles references throughout Tism's career. There was one tour they did where they were dressed up with big signs above their heads, and I think about half the band had John written above their heads, and then about a third, these sums aren't going to add up, but about a third had Paul, and then like a couple had George, and only one had Ringo or something like that.
There's only one Ringo.
That was their point.
Yeah.
Just for context there, Tism is like a really, really crazy Australian band.
For our international listeners.
Yeah, just check funny the acts, they are catchy very... and yeah. Just the best.
I think this idea kind of came about because a few months ago, it might have even been around comedy festival time, I was going through a phase of asking people firstly what their middle names were and then secondly, favourite Beatles song. And then it just got me back into, I've always listened to the Beatles, but it just made me really obsessed with them for a little while. And while I was researching, I was listening to them. They're so bloody good.
They are so good.
They are
Who
great.
Is your favourite Beatles
McCartney.
Song?
Oh, song? No,
song I asked or Beatle?
I was meaning to ask song because you just brought that up, and then but I asked a different question. Try to save it by
okay.
I didn't. Anyway, answer both questions at once.
Favorite Beatle is McCartney because he's a lefty.
That's a good reason.
Yeah, and I'm left-handed. Favorite song? It's hard though. You end up with a short list. You can't pick a fave.
Yeah.
What do you have a favorite?
Yeah.
What is it?
Something.
Oh, okay.
And my favorite.
George Harrison.
George Harrison, yeah.
There you go, the only number one written by him.
Yeah.
But with the Beatles, he had number one solo.
No, sorry, I meant Beatles.
Yeah.
Beatles
number Do you one. Have a favourite song?
I have a favourite Beatle.
Yeah. It's
definitely Paul.
Yeah.
He wrote all the better songs.
Wow, that's so rare. Normally, if you found three people, there'd be at least two John fans.
Yeah.
I reckon.
Yeah, no, he's pretty good, but Paul, I think, wrote better songs, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Like okay, him. That's interesting.
I think
he also wrote worse songs. It's hard to... Oh, no, John wrote some pretty bad songs.
Yeah,
well.
they had some misses.
Like, John's bad songs were just, like, weird and hard to listen to. Paul's were, like too sweet.
Like, corny.
Yeah, corny. I think my favourite songs would be Blackbird or...
Great tune.
Here Comes the Sun.
Which is another George.
True.
That is a George.
And Blackbird's a... That's a Paul? Or is that a...
That was a Paul, I think,
singing. Yeah, I think that is a Paul song. That's a really good song. I love that song.
Great song.
Okay, well, my favourite, I have two.
Yep.
Yesterday, Paul.
That's a big one.
Got a fun fact about that coming up.
Oh, good, good, good. And another one, which is actually a cover, but Paul sings. Do you know the song Till There Was You?
Yeah. That's a pretty song.
That is such a lovely song, and I once listened to that on a beach at night, and I'll never forget that.
That sounds lovely.
That's nice.
It was really nice.
Yeah.
The waves crashing away while Paul was singing.
He wasn't there, Dave. You were alone.
Well, he was in my heart that night.
He's always in our hearts. So shall we begin?
Yes, I'm excited because are you going to try and tackle the whole Beatles?
Well, that's the thing. You see now that I've
but the thing
went
is
big.
It's big, but it's also just a 10-year period as well.
Yeah, they weren't around for long, but they did a lot in that time.
Yeah.
Like, too much. And I also just wanted to, because I didn't know a lot about how they started, and their story really runs like a movie about a boy band. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you saw a movie about this band, it's exactly how you think it would happen. Like, they start off really well, then they get some success, and then they have a falling out, and then they, you know, it's just everything. They were a bunch of bloody larrikins too.
Oh my goodness. Oh, well, Jess, I'm going to tell you the magic words, the Beatles, please. I do go on.
Okay, well, let's begin in March of 1957. A great year, a good time.
Classic.
Actually, that was the year my mum was born. Just realised. Anyway, hey mum, John Lennon, who was 16 at the time, formed a skiffle group with several of his friends from the Quarry Bank School. Skiffle.
Skiffle. It's great. The word skiffle is very good.
Great. So it's a genre of music that has influences from jazz, blues, folks, and roots music. It's that type of music that used to use like homemade or improvised instruments, like the washboard and the jugs.
I was picturing a washboard.
Yeah. That's so good. That's it. Kazoos, guitars, banjo.
Lagerphone?
Yeah.
That's an Aussie thing. Yeah, I don't know. Come on, Dave.
But it's a ridiculous thing.
That's like the bottle cap one, right?
Yeah, it's if you don't know, it's like you've got two planks of wood, sort of in a crucifix style shape is what I've seen, and then there's heaps of bottle caps nailed to it, and then you just jangle it like and that is someone's job, and they call it the lagerphone. There you go.
That's beautiful. So skiffle was a very popular style of music in like the first half of the 20th century, and it had this huge it sort of became popular again in the 50s in the UK. Now the band originally called themselves the Blackjacks.
Did
you know that
that
they had other names?
I knew them as the Quarrymen.
Yeah, which is because that's exactly it. Because there was another band in the area that was using the name the Blackjacks, so they changed it to the Quarrymen.
And it's not like the kind of days where you can just plug it into Facebook to see if the band already exists.
Exactly.
You just both turn up to the show, and you're like, oh, no, I'm pretty sure we're playing this gig.
Yeah, exactly. So,
whoops.
And they became the Quarrymen because they went to the Quarry Bank School. Makes sense, doesn't it? So then 4 months later, John Lennon met 15-year-old Paul McCartney, and he joined the band as a rhythm guitarist. And in the following Feb, so we're in 1958 now, McCartney invited his friend George Harrison to come watch the band play. And George wanted to join, but he was only 14, and John Lennon was like, he's too young. He's too young. He can't be in our band.
Classic John putting George down already.
Right. But Harrison kept persisting, and after about a month of hassling them, they enlisted him as the lead guitarist. So there you go, 14. So they were teenagers. I don't think I realised that.
And
how early they started, how young they were.
Also, the fact that he's hassling, and he's like, all right, fine, you can be the lead guitarist.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like Paul's like, hang on, mate, I'm older and I've been to the band longer.
Yeah.
Why did Paul get shuffled to bass guitar?
That's coming up.
Oh, sorry.
But there's a story.
Ooh.
Yeah. Ooh. Ooh, boy. I do want to point out as well that you have a musical background, Dave.
Oh, yes. I used to play in bands all through school, and my instrument was bass guitar.
Yeah.
One of the other reasons I like Paul a lot.
There you go. Matt, did you ever play an instrument? Were you in a band?
I've never really been in a band. I've been in conceptual bands.
Okay.
But never played together.
Sorry, what does that mean? When in your mind, you had a dream that I was in a band.
I used to be in a band that never played together called... And this was before...
Sorry, what do you mean never played together?
Well, we had the concept of the band, and we organised one jam session. Mm-hmm. And I'm a bass owner. I don't call myself a bass player, but I do own a bass. I broke a string on that bass about 2 years ago. Still play it as a three string.
which string?
The G string.
Oh, comedy gold.
It wasn't comedy. That's just the string that broke. You asked
the question.
Yeah,
but of course it was going to be the G. It's always the G.
Which is the highest string on a bass guitar.
Yeah. So I just like relearned the couple of songs I know with three strings. Anyway, the band I formed with a guy I was working with at Safeway, it was called Tony Abbott and the Moral High Ground. And it was... This was the worst thing I've ever heard. it was meant to be like, at the time it was kind of like it seemed like a kind of weird reference, because he was just like I think he was health minister or something. He wasn't even that prominent. But now it's just like, that's a shit name for a band. But yeah. At the time it was like, majority of people didn't know who that was.
Yeah, was he the health
minister in the Howard?
Opposition leader.
No, he was in the Howard government.
Was this
he was
before...
health minister. Yeah, wow. So this goes a while back. I was pushing trolleys or something.
That's great.
And, and then the guy that I was in that band with, he also had a band, and I was in his band as well, which we never played.
Sure. Yeah,
and they were called Kerry O'Brien and the Contentious Issues.
Oh, my God.
It's mean.
Well, there's a lot of names and the somethings.
Yeah, I know. It's so much fun to make band. It's so much fun.
It is fun.
Give it a go.
No, but I was in a band when I was in high school. We were called Cause of Distraction.
That's Cause pretty good.
Distraction.
Cause of Distraction, yeah.
Where's
Cause
that
of
from?
Distraction
no
and
idea.
The...
Yeah, you're right. It needed an and the, but that's already too long. So I'm just glad we can all relate to...
We're all such musical prodigies.
Being bands
Look,
in
That's
in
right. We can all compare ourselves to the Beatles.
Yeah.
I can play Happy Man on bass. I tried to learn... One of my favourite Beatles songs is... And Your Bird Can Sing, a Lennon song.
Mm.
I'm like, this is so cool, and it's got such a fun bass line. I'm going to learn the bass line. And then I tried to, I couldn't get it in the first half an hour.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't get anywhere near it. And I'm just like, oh, Paul McCartney writes some really cool, intricate bass lines, apparently. It just sounds like this bouncy, fun bass line, but it was...
It's hard.
Yeah.
I played piano, and so I can play... I used to be able to play yesterday, so I could have serenaded you, Dave. But
thank you.
One of my challenges that I would always wanted to do would to be able to play Martha, My Dear. Like, the opening to that is just ridiculous, because your hands are just going spaz, basically. But then I stopped playing, and now I can't even play chopsticks. So, you know.
Jess, what does your hands are going spaz mean? Because...
I'm fine with it. You can go spaz all day
Dave
long
gets
with your
what
hands.
I mean. Anyway, shall I go on?
Please, do go on.
Okay, so by the next year, so we're in 1959 now.
Right on.
All of Lennon's school friends had left the group because they'd all gone on to, do other things.
I bet they regretted that.
Right? There's so many people in this story that you're like, ooh, you're going to regret that. Right? So Lennon's now studying at the Liverpool College of Art. So now the band's left with three guitarists. Now, I'm not a musician, but I do know that three guitars does not a band make. Right.
So is there anyone on drums? No.
Well, that's exactly it. They would get when they could find a drummer, they would play rock and roll music wherever they could. But they would just get like people to just fill in and play the drums for them. I think mainly doing covers. At this point they were calling themselves Johnny and the Moondogs. Which is amazing.
Didn't know that. That's great.
Yeah, that name didn't last very long, but there is definitely records that they were billed under that name for at least three times. Johnny and the Moondogs.
Johnny.
See, it's your favourite.
That's how you should make it. If you're going to have a band name,
name
that's what it should be.
Johnny and the Moral High Ground.
That's great. The Moral
another band from around that time from Liverpool called Jerry and the Pacemakers. That's a great name
great
for a band,
name.
Right? Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Great name. I love it.
Yeah.
So now, here we go. Now a friend of John Lennon's from art school, Stuart Sutcliffe, was a very talented painter. He was an artist. And he'd recently sold one of his paintings and with his earnings bought a bass guitar.
Nice.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I made some money. Well, I'll buy a bass. So he joined the band in 1960. And it was Sutcliffe who suggested the band change the name to Beatles. But I think he was spelling it Beatals. As like a tribute to Buddy Holly and the Crickets? I don't really...
Are you
really
sure it wasn't just like he didn't spell it just like the Beatles?
No, there was apparently...
That's
weird. Yeah, Beatles. It started with the word beat in it, but like Beatles, yeah. But then they changed it to the Silver Beatles, spelt double E.
Right.
I'm so glad they're not the Silver Beatles.
Silver Beatles, right? And then it was Lennon who suggested changing the spelling to B-E-A to include the word beat. Apparently, I did read somewhere that he had a dream... that like somebody, a man appeared on a floating pie or something like that. You know that story as well? You agree because you've had that dream.
That sounds like something that would have happened. Beatles movie.
Sounds like classic John Lennon bullshit.
Yeah, exactly. So who knows how...
I had a dream where a man came to me on a pie.
And I thought I'd call
put an
it...
A in the name, yeah, John.
That's pretty much the one I read.
Tony Abbott and the Peacemakers.
I didn't put that in there.
I said, who's Tony Abbott? And I woke up.
And here we are. They were going by the Silver Beatles and then eventually just the Beatles by August of 1960. So
August 1960, that is when they are...
The Beatles.
The Beatles. And at this stage, still no drummer.
No drummer.
Three guitarists and a bass player.
Yeah. No drummer. So there was this guy called Alan Williams. He became the band's unofficial manager. He owned a coffee shop that the boys were all regulars at. He liked them. He got them their residency in Hamburg, which is sort of where they took off. Had a big falling out with them when they refused to pay him. That was funny. And a little fun fact, Brian Epstein became the band's manager later, and he contacted Alan Williams to make sure there was no remaining contractual ties. Williams openly told him, he's like, don't touch them with a fucking barge pole. They'll let you down.
Let me down.
And they did. So he's one of those people that walked away from the Beatles.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, he even had a memoir called "The Man Who Gave Up the Beatles." "The Man Who Gave the Beatles Away."
What is it like? There's one chapter, and then of the actual story, and then 11 chapters of him going, "Well, my life would have been better at this point if I'd been with the Beatles."
Exactly.
Probably wouldn't have married that woman.
Yeah.
Probably wouldn't have had this crappy job.
I always think about with those situations though, right? If he stayed their manager, we probably would never have heard of him, right? Brian Epstein was pretty good at his job.
Mm.
And like if all his schoolmates were still around and there was never a spot for George in the band,
exactly.
So it's like they probably wouldn't have really been the Beatles. So it would be hard.
Call,
it'd be hard to get over it, but at the same time, I think the one guy who could probably feel it is the drummer who got booted for Ringo.
Yeah,
because
absolutely, and that's coming up.
Oh, coming up next. Do go on.
Bit of sizzle.
Yeah, a bit of sizzle for you. They were. Brings me back to Stuart Sutcliffe. So he was with the band during their residency in Hamburg.
Which is in Germany, obviously.
Yep, correct. So they were sort of back and forth between Germany and the UK for a couple of years, gigging there. They got up to all kinds of mischief. So by this time they had Pete Best on the drums. And keep in mind, they were all in their late teens, early 20s. Like they're still really young. It's pretty crazy.
Is George even old enough to drink yet?
No. And there's a fun fact about that coming up. You guys are just, what we're talking about.
We all think alike.
So there's a club owner in Hamburg called Bruno Koschmeider.
I don't know. It's so rude of me to laugh at, but...
I probably said it wrong, but...
Bruno Koschmeider?
He was the one that was... he owned the venue where they were playing during their residencies in Hamburg. And he found out that they'd been performing at the rival Top 10 Club, which was in breach of their contract. So he gave the band 1 month's termination notice and reported the underage Harrison. Harrison had lied about his age to stay in order to stay in Hamburg. So he'd said he was 18, he was 17. So the authorities arranged for his... for him to be deported.
Deported?
He got deported in late November. And a week later, Koschmeider had McCartney and Pete Best arrested for arson.
What did they burn?
They set fire to a condom in a concrete corridor. Condom in a concrete corridor.
That's very difficult. One, to set fire to anything in a concrete. Two, to set fire to a latex condom.
No. So he should have been impressed.
How would you set... Matt... Back me up here. The science of burning that.
Burning rubber? That's a phrase in itself. That's how common it is.
Yeah, it's
a little
true.
Bit burning rubber. No, that's a different thing, though. But that's all right.
Well, okay. Well, I'm impressed. Yeah. But they got arrested.
I think that's...
Arrested and deported as well.
And then deported.
Yep.
Dave, should we pause the podcast? I've got a condom right here. Let's see.
Oh, wow. It's going up really quick. Whoa, a little too quick if you ask me.
Oh, boy.
A lot of flames in the studio.
Oh, that is a putrid smoke.
Oh, God.
It was a used condom.
Well, we really should have checked. Really
should have
checked.
I'm so sorry.
No, you're not.
So who's left if George has been deported, then Paul's been deported.
Yep. Pete Best is gone. So Lennon and Sutcliffe are still there.
Just hanging out going, God.
Right, so they all get deported. Lennon returns in early December. So this is only in November. He just comes back a couple of weeks later anyway. He goes back to the UK. Stuart Sutcliffe decides to stay in Hamburg through to late February because he's met a nice German girl and he's engaged. So he stays with his fiancée, Astrid. So yeah, as I said before, they spent 2 years gigging in Hamburg, sort of coming back and forth. This is kind of where they started to use stimulant drugs, you know, to maintain energy for late night performances.
Viagra
stimulant. Oh, yes, very right. Good. very good.
Very good. Thanks for patting me on the head.
That's so condescending. I'm so sorry. So, 1961, Sutcliffe decides to leave the band and go back to pursuing his art studies. You know, there's kind of that part of you that's like, dude.
But I'm pretty sure he wasn't very... Was he any good? I think he wasn't very good on the bass, right?
Yeah, there are sort of stories that he wasn't interested. Great. But see, it's funny because I did read that there were some reports that people said he had no stage presence. Like he was a bit shy about not being good, so he would sort of turn his back on the audience. But then other members of the band were like, no, he was great, very personable. So right. I'm not really sure...
But did he come back or did he stay in Germany and just go, I'm out, send him a letter or something?
He stayed in Germany. So I think they must have all met up and he's left them because he gave Paul McCartney his bass and that's how Paul McCartney became the bass player. So he sort of said, here, you can use my bass while you save up to get your own. But McCartney's a lefty. So,
yeah.
But Sutcliffe said to him, you're allowed to use it, but you're not allowed to restring it. Like you can't swap it over, can't be left-handed. So a lefty playing a right-handed bass.
Right. So did he just play it upside down?
I'm not sure. Or he might have just played it right-handed. I don't know if he flipped it over and played left upside down or if he just played
either
right.
Way, it's a good effort.
Yeah, it's really difficult.
It is hard. Like I played guitar left-handed as a teenager and I'm teaching myself the ukulele now and I'm doing it right-handed and my hands just don't work. I'm like, this is weird.
It's completely wrong.
Yeah. So that story is kind of almost well known that Paul McCartney took over once Stuart Sutcliffe left. But what's less reported is Chaz Newby. Ever heard of that name?
No, but I love it.
Yeah. Right. So
that rivals Bruno. Whatever that German guy was called.
Koschmider.
Chaz Pete Newby. Best is a pretty good name.
Pete
as well.
Best is a great stage name. Yeah. Right, so Chaz was a friend of the original Beatles drummer, Pete Best, and he played a couple of gigs with the Beatles playing bass in 1960, and John Lennon even asked him to return with them to Hamburg for their second trip, but Newby chose to return to university and later became a maths teacher.
Oh.
Could have been one of the Beatles. You could have been one of the Beatles.
Every year, he would start his year 7 class and be like, all right, guys, I'm a maths teacher. Just so you know, I was once in the Beatles.
Yeah.
Okay, Pythagoras.
Yeah, do you see that as a positive or a negative? Would you prefer to have not had that experience at all and no regret? Or is it just a cool thing to be able to remember?
It's just a cool thing to whip out. Like, to say, hey.
If but you I chose... fully don't believe that you would have helped them, maybe? It would be all right.
Maybe.
But if you're like, oh man, I could have been in there and I would have written some hits as well.
Would you have been happy riding their coattails?
Yeah, but maybe, I mean, I feel like it's like a decent footballer in a great team, you know, you lift.
Yeah.
And you lift to their standard or something. Maybe he could have written great songs. I reckon there's so many great songs that we've never heard. And if those songs were written by a Beatles member, they'd be seen as classics, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because, you know, partially because they were all very talented musicians, but also just because they had like direct access into people's minds, right? Like if you're open to a song being great the first time you hear it, you're much more likely to give it a chance than someone going, here's a demo that I just made in my backyard.
Still, Matt, that sounds like a really bitter man saying something like that. Yeah, I could have done it. I would have... The White Album, I just would have made it blue.
Look...
Blue Album.
You would... Yeah, totally. It would be hard. You know what? Everyone would be like, all right, mate. Good on you. But I reckon there'd be part of you who would really believe that you could have been a part of it, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. That's why it's
Look,
hard.
I'm seesawing here. I'm
no, but like all he did was make the right decision for himself at the time.
That's right. So Chaz has moved on. He's doing his maths thing.
Good on you,
and
Chaz.
Then is that when Paul's like, all right, I'll do some bass.
Yeah. So that's so.
I've never heard about that guy. So that's
yeah.
Cool.
That was a bit earlier. So that was sort of before Sutcliffe left.
You know when people always say, oh, he was the fifth Beatle. That guy was like the 19th.
Yeah.
Beatle.
Pretty much. So yeah. Now Paul's rocking slapping the bass. It's a very weird reference. Anyway, so they're going back and forth between the UK and Germany, and in April of 62, they get back to Germany, and they're greeted at the airport by Stuart Sutcliffe's fiance Astrid, telling them that he'd died of an aneurysm.
Ooh.
He was 21.
21?
21.
Just and it's a freak medical thing that...
He'd been having headaches. Quite bad headaches. Man. By the sounds of the reports or like the symptoms, it sounds like migraines. He was having pretty serious migraines, and then collapsed. And I don't think they could revive him. And it turned out it was an aneurysm.
My God! And then
21.
Just love the idea that she didn't want to ring them. She decided just to appear at the airport.
Yeah.
Track their maybe Stuart offered them a lift, and that he died the night before. She said, "Well, an airport lift is." Very difficult to get.
Yeah.
I'm still going to come through and pick them up.
Yeah, I mean,
it's also probably hard to just call people back then, right? Especially if they're on the move.
International, yeah, true.
Does she know where they are? Like, does she know their number?
I think it had happened about a week before. So, well, yeah, I know, it's a weird one.
Bit of a courtesy call, Astrid, come on.
Because I was going to say,
Dave, look,
like,
I'm on Astrid's side.
Yeah, I know.
For some reason, I'm sticking up for Astrid.
Yeah. That, whatever I should, but so yeah, I was gonna before I learnt that he died. I was gonna be like, he left the Beatles to pursue painting. Like, what an idiot! But he's a very talented artist, apparently, and unfortunately died at 21. So he never got to see how successful they got, and therefore feel the jealousy that we think the others.
Yeah, that's
have,
right.
You know,
he dodged the jealousy.
Bullets. He died on top. Like, he was great. He was in the peak. Okay, so now we're in 1962. All right, a great year. Mm-hmm. The band gets a producer, George Martin. Now, Martin's first recording...
The fifth Beatle.
The fifth Beatle.
The eighth Beatle.
Not to be confused with the Game of Thrones guy.
That's
George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, this
is that
just
why
George
he's got
Martin.
The arms?
He must have the arms.
Maybe.
Was there a George R. Martin?
Yeah, there was just one R.
Oh my God.
It's too complicated. So, Martin's first recording session with the Beatles took place at EMI's Abbey Road Studios, the very famous Abbey Road Studios in London.
I have heard of it.
Yeah.
We just cut a hit record.
Very good. No, the accents are great. Keep them coming.
Guest starring Ringo on this episode.
Yeah. Well, here he comes. Because this is in June of 1962. Now, Martin immediately complains to Brian Epstein. I keep going to say
Epstein,
or Epstein.
Epstein's what I know
it
as.
Epstein it is then. So he complains to Epstein about Pete Best. He's like, this guy...
Despite his name, he is definitely
not the
on
best.
Top.
He is a crap drummer. I reckon we get a session drummer in for this record, right? Now, they were already apparently thinking about getting rid of Pete Best, so the Beatles replaced him in mid-August with Ringo Starr, whose real name is Richard Starkey, but you probably knew that. He left the band Rory Storm and the Hurricanes to join them. There it is again.
That's so good.
Wow. And then,
it was
so
a great time for the something and the somethings.
Rory Storm and the Hurricanes.
And was it Ringo a name that he... was already known as, or did he decide to have a cool name when they were rock star?
It was a nickname that started, apparently they called him Rings to start with because he would wear a lot of rings, and then that became Ringo a little bit later. But apparently, I can't remember what song it was, I did read, you can hear, I think, John yell out, "Are you ready, Richard?" at the start of a song. So they might have called him Richard.
Aha, uh-huh, right on.
Yeah, but Ringo was sort of a name that came later. God, I'm so glad I'm remembering these facts.
That's great. That's a great fact. I had no idea that that's why they called him Ringo. So Ringo's in. Pete Best is out.
How often are nicknames way more disappointing when you find the backstory?
Yeah, that was a pretty disappointing name.
Oh, yeah,
he wore
rings.
Yeah, it's dumb. So September 11 of that year. No, it's many, many years before that September 11.
They were in the Twin Towers.
They were.
Oh, my God.
Cutting a hit record. It's getting worse.
They cut two originals, Love Me Do and P.S. I Love You, which became their first UK top 20 hit in October.
Which P.S. I Love You was the...
Was the B-side.
Was the B-side, right.
To Love Me Do.
And every song on that album had love in the title. That's not true, but it sounded like...
I'm only sticking to true facts.
All right, okay. Great.
Sorry, Matt, come on.
Love Me Do, P.S. I Love You... Love, lovey, love, love. There was one of the
Twiddly Deed Dumpling.
Tism had this album, it was probably their biggest album, called Machiavelli and the Four Seasons. And that was like this fake band that they put it out, and it looked like that was the band who was releasing the album. On the back, every song title was, it must have been taking the piss out of the Beatles a bit, but it was like, I love you, you I love. Loving you is the thing I do. And just all that sort of, everything was some variation of I love you.
That's great.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com. This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Where am I? Okay, so that song goes to their first top 20. In early 63, Please Please Me went to number 2, and they recorded an album of the same name in one 10-hour session on the 11th of Feb in 63. 10 hours, smashed out an album.
That is unbelievable.
Isn't it? That's ridiculous. So this is a little fun fact. By mid-year of 63, the Beatles were given billing over Roy Orbison on a national tour. And that's
over Roy.
Mm-hmm. And that's where that hysterical outbreak of Beatlemania had begun. Like, following their first tour of Europe in October, they moved to London, and they were constantly mobbed by screaming fans. They even required police protection almost any time they were seen in public. Isn't that ridiculous?
What year is this?
That's 63.
So the first album's just dropped.
Yeah.
So this is totally just boy band mania as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And later in that year, She Loves You became the biggest selling single in British history.
Right.
Oh, my God.
That's pretty big. Yeah. Now, the EMI, so the record label, their American label, Capitol, hadn't released any of the group's records. But they were finally persuaded to release its fourth single, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Meet the Beatles, which was the identical to their second British album, With the Beatles. So they changed it for American audiences to Meet the Beatles. They convinced Capitol to invest $50,000 in promotion for this then completely unknown British act.
But surely that's just a... You're seeing how crazy they're going in London, you'd be like, well... We could probably do well over here.
I think at that point, English bands, British bands hadn't done well ever.
They hadn't.
Never translated across. So
started that. Yeah. As we'll find out.
As we'll find out, the British invasion's coming.
Yeah, absolutely. So the album and the single became the Beatles' first US chart toppers.
So it did go to number one.
Yep.
Nice.
70 million people watched them on the Ed Sullivan Show, which was approximately 34% of the American population.
That's ridiculous.
Wow, 1 in 3 people saw them on TV.
70 million
people. It's probably one channel, but anyway, still impressive.
They didn't have the on-demand and all the free-to-air channels that we have now. They didn't
have Fox actually, the more you talk about it, the less impressed I am.
Yeah.
Okay, well, 34% of the population is pretty good still.
That is...
For this unknown band, you know?
That is amazing.
And in April of 64, Can't Buy Me Love became the first record to top American and British charts simultaneously. And that same month, the Beatles held the top 5 positions on the Billboard singles chart.
Crazy.
Top 5 was all the Beatles. So Can't Buy Me Love, Twist and Shout, She Loves You, I Want to Hold Your Hand, and Please Please Me.
That is so great.
Isn't that incredible?
Just by the album. Oh, no, but back then they didn't, the singles weren't on albums, I don't think.
The Beatles
always released singles, but, you know, now they'll always include those on the album.
Yeah.
I don't think they included their singles on the albums.
That makes sense then.
Yeah.
Okay, because, that makes a bit more sense. And there was something, so this is when their first movie comes out as well, A Hard Day's Night. It opened in America in August. It grossed $1.3 million in its first week. That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's a lot of money.
For back then, especially. Yeah,
and they were pretty crap movies as well, weren't they?
They weren't good. But there was something, I didn't write it down, but it was basically they had like a 3-film contract to coincide with soundtracks that would go out. So it was like an album and a movie would come out all at the same time. And that's, they were very aggressively merchandised. There was like the Beatles wigs, Beatles clothes, dolls, lunchboxes, a cartoon series, which I'd love to find. From which, because of Epstein's ineptitude at business, the band made surprisingly little money.
Oh, come on.
They didn't make a lot of money.
Should have got that cafe bloke. He'd be making heaps.
He'd be making heaps. Don't you think it's
crazy that they're able to survive all of that and with their reputation intact? It feels like any band that do all of that stuff now, they're never going to also be seen as a great musical band.
It's really
band.
Cool.
Exactly. Yeah, like, our kids aren't going to listen to One Direction and be like, wow, Mum. You know, I'll apologise to them for One Direction.
Yeah, like even now, like One Direction are seen as being quite lame, but the Beatles, but it seems like they were seen as being cool at the same time, or maybe they weren't until later. Because I know the Stones were sort of the meant to be the bad boy equivalent of them.
Yeah, and it was mostly like young women going pretty crazy for them, but I don't know, maybe they were still cool. Hmm. Well, no, we weren't there. We'll never know.
Yeah.
So that's sort of how the Beatles opened the American market to British invasion groups like the Dave Clark Five, the Rolling Stones and the Kinks. That's sort of how a lot of British acts ended up cracking into the American scene, which is...
And Jerry and the Pacemakers.
Jerry and the Pacemakers. Okay, so by 1965, Lennon and McCartney rarely wrote songs together, although by contractual and personal agreement, songs by either of them were credited to both. Did you know that?
Yeah.
That's kind of crazy.
And then, since John Lennon's died, McCartney has tried several times to make it the ones that he wrote as listed as McCartney/Lennon.
Yeah.
Ah.
And Yoko said no.
Yeah, Yoko won't have a bar.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Because, yeah, I think there was occasionally, like, they'd touch them up a little bit, each other's songs. But for the most part, like, they wrote them. And sometimes even recorded Beatles songs with one of them wasn't even there.
Yeah,
and
yeah, there started to be quite a bit of animosity. They weren't too pleased with each other after a while.
Oh, please me. No.
Oh, very good. So it's 1965, they toured Europe, North America, the Far East and Australia.
So what's the Far East?
I've no idea. It just says the Far East.
Or the Orient.
Oh, konnichiwa,
the Far
sir.
East.
Oh my goodness, and the Far East. It says that on the tour, visiting the Far East, and the people in Asia are like, is that us? Is that us?
Are we from east from what?
Are we, east from here is them.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Go far enough east, you'll get somewhere.
Yeah.
And that's when their second movie, Help, came out as well.
That's the only one I've seen.
Yeah.
What can you describe? I haven't seen any of their movies. What's it like?
It's a comedy. It's actually it's really funny.
Yeah. Huh. They're quite funny. And it was filmed in England, Austria, and the Bahamas.
They do the soundtrack. So the album Help is like sort of the soundtrack to it.
Exactly.
Including the best song ever, Yesterday.
Okay. Yesterday's
of Help. There you go.
Now in June, something. This is still 1965. In June, the Queen of England. Ever heard of her? The Queen?
Yes.
The Queen of England. Rings a bell.
Yeah.
Ringo's a bell.
I love that.
Oh, man.
Oh, dear.
I love that it is still 50 years later, the same Queen that we were referring to.
And that's pretty cool, right?
So cool, yeah.
She's a boss. She announced that the Beatles would be awarded the MBE, so the Member of the Order of the British Empire. Now, that announcement sparked some controversy. Some former MBE holders returned their medals.
Oh, my God.
In
That's
protest.
That's so dumb.
Really?
Because, they were like war veterans and, you know, had done a lot for
them. Oh, so they were the first of the celebrity MBEs.
Yeah, it looks like it.
Because, everyone's a knight now. Elton John's a knight.
Yeah.
Rowan Atkinson.
Yeah, I think, and it's always for charity work or
exactly,
something.
Exactly, yeah.
But it's like, Roger Moore for his charity work.
And theirs was for like service to the music industry.
Oh, well, that's...
And Lennon
that's
even
genuine.
Sort of made a joke like, we deserve it more. You know what Lennon's like.
Yeah.
He changed his mind about it a lot.
So he's about what my age at this stage, about 25. And he's
got
an MBE. God
yeah.
Damn
what,
it.
What have we done? Nothing. Fun fact, though.
To be honest, if I got an MBE right now, a lot of people would be returning theirs in protest.
Yeah. What the? Who is that guy?
Who's this guy?
Lennon actually
a facty fact.
He returned his medal in 1969 as an anti-war gesture, which is an interesting one. It's a kind of a funny story, actually. He was never all that happy or proud of the medal. So 4 years after accepting it, he got his chauffeur, Les Anthony, to go to his Aunt Mimi's house where the medal was, pick it up, take it to the Buckingham Palace, just pop over to Buckingham Palace and return it with this letter enclosed. He said, "Your Majesty, I am returning this MBE in protest against Britain's involvement in the Nigeria Biafra thing." Against our support.
Sorry, did he actually write thing?
Against our support. It gets better. Against our support of America and Vietnam and against Cold Turkey slipping down the charts. Cold Turkey was his latest record.
Oh, God.
With love, John Lennon.
And that is why he is not in my top three favourite Beatles.
So that's
wow.
That's
he's
fun.
Your least favourite Beatle.
He's just not a good guy.
No, and like
he was also I didn't realise it. I think I read a brief note somewhere yesterday that he was like he's a known spousal abuser. Is that right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, not very good to his partners. No.
I didn't realise that as well.
Yeah, he doesn't sound and in the more research you do, he just sounds like a bit of a dick. And he changes his mind quite often as well. Like he was quite cocky about getting the MBE and then he changed his mind and then he returns it and then he's like, "Oh, I regret returning it." It's like, well, just come on, man, just grow up.
As far as protests go, getting your chauffeur to send a mag, it's like, well, yeah, this guy.
Yeah.
He means it.
It's just a gesture because you can't actually take you can reject the medal, but the honour itself can't be returned. He's still an MBE.
Uh-huh.
So it's just a gesture of giving back a little piece of medal.
The only way you can get that is if you do something terrible, like Rolf Harris, and you get it taken away from you.
You can't get rid of it.
Give it back. So, yep. Old mate Johnny.
Yeah. So this is kind of where their music style starts to change a little bit with the 1965 Rubber Soul. And they start to experiment a little more with exotic instruments, like in Norwegian wood that has a sitar. I don't know why I said it like that, but I did.
That sitar, the classic Norwegian instrument.
Yeah, absolutely.
Isn't Rubber Soul's like a derogatory term for like white soul music, I think? So I think it was something that was said against them and then they sort of embraced it, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So they started to...
I don't know. That's a great little tidbit.
Yeah,
like
let's say it's true.
Okay, good.
Yeah, so like, and if you know their music, you know that there's quite a change. They go from really poppy to a bit more experimental and slower, and this is where it all starts to happen. So summer of 66, there's a whole big controversy because John Lennon made a remark that had the British newspaper reporter... Oh, no, he had made a remark to a British newspaper reporter. He said, "Christianity will go. It'll vanish and shrink. I needn't argue with that. I'm right and will be proved right. We're more popular than Jesus now." So that's quite a famous thing that he said. I definitely knew he said we're bigger than Jesus or more popular than Jesus. But the fact that he's saying Christianity will go. Now, a bit of a silly thing to say. People set fire to their stuff. Burnt the records.
Because I thought that at the time he made the comment and no one really picked up on it until Americans published it later on.
Exactly right. Yeah. It was widely reported in the US. I don't think the British really paid much attention to it.
Yeah, I think it was like 9 months later or something.
Yeah, but the US were not happy.
They republished it, and then in the South it was not a good thing to say.
Yeah.
He has, Christianity is shriveling, right? At least in the West.
So,
not in the Far East, Matt.
wherever that is.
Wherever that is.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I think a few different countries or cultures were a bit upset by it, but it was worse in the US, where they were set to begin a tour just 2 weeks after the controversy erupted.
Oh, dear.
So they were going to go there. It included death threats against the group. Like, the US were really not happy about it. And so it says largely out of concern for the safety of his fellow band members, he did apologise.
Right.
So he's like, "All right, I don't want Matt do the accent. I don't want anybody to get hurt.
I don't want anyone to get hurt."
That's great. So he apologized, but I just think that's kind of funny that I didn't realize the backlash.
And did they do the tour anyway?
Yeah,
that's pretty brave, I think.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever heard the full quote either.
Yeah, I'd only heard that last bit.
And I thought someone had explained it to me that he was making a joke, like saying it's ridiculous how we're... But it doesn't sound like that at all in the context there.
No, he's making quite a comment about Christianity.
And as a Christian man, myself,
do you forgive him?
I forgive him. That's what we're all about.
Exactly.
Also, I'm not a Christian man, but
wait, I forgive him anyway.
Did I just blaspheme? Anyway, what? look, I was a Christian man, so I think it's okay for me to joke about such thing. And I am bigger than Jesus because he was quite a short man.
Was he?
I have no idea.
Fun fact: Lennon, McCartney, and was it Ringo were all 5'11"? George Harrison 5'8". It's the shortest, but they were all the same height.
That is interesting.
I read that yesterday. I was like, "That's not that. It's interesting."
5'11". I'm 5'11" ish.
Are you?
Yeah. I reckon I'm.
I thought you were taller than that.
I think I'm 5'8".
You'd be 5'8". Yeah.
5'8". So who's it? George is my height.
You're George.
Sure. Thank you.
And Matt is everybody else.
Right. I think I'd read at some point that because George was a little bit younger, like you were saying, he was never quite respected by the others. They always kind of treated him like a younger brother.
Yeah.
Did you pick anything up like that?
Yeah. Not directly, but you do kind of get that feeling a little bit. Yeah.
And it took him ages to really start being allowed to have songs included on albums. And
yeah.
I say ages. It's all relative because they're only making albums for less than 10 years by the sound of it.
Yeah. Really,
their last album was 1970 or something. And you said their first one was 1962. 1960. So it was about
62 was the first
62,
album.
Yeah. They were pretty active from 60.
Yeah. I can't believe, like, when you see footage of them through the years, just how much they change hairstyles, fashion, everything. I would have assumed, as a kid, I did assume it was over 30 years or something.
Yeah, me too.
I was blown away when I found out it was only 10 years. And they did so much, so many hit songs, so much of an impact on music.
Yeah.
And then, like, other bands who were seen as kind of being their equals or similar, like the Stones, they're still going, stretched out over, what are they, been going for 100 years now or something?
Easily.
They've been quite a long time.
Easily. Yeah, it's ridiculous that they've lasted so long.
Yeah.
And that they're appreciated by generations. Like I said, they sort of started to make music as teenagers the year my mum was born. So she wasn't even really into them until she was older.
Right.
And then has passed that on to, my generation, and then they just keep going.
My dad was born a couple of years before in 1953, and he has some memories. He says he's got this vague memory of young Beatles fans in Australia dressing as Beatles. Like, as actual, he's like, yeah, the Beatles. It's kind of crazy. And it got pretty hectic down here as well.
Yeah.
Like, that Melbourne gig at Festival Hall. Apparently, they played two shows or something, but you couldn't hear them. I've heard people who were there talk about it. Like, you couldn't hear them. And everyone there was screaming. It's like, what are you there for?
Yeah.
And isn't that kind of why they ended up giving away live performance?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. It just got too much.
Yeah, I think it was just.
It was just kind of, I was like, well, what's the point of playing if you?
Yeah.
No one's listening anyway.
You just stand there for an hour and get
people are literally
at.
Just there to be in the same room as them. They can't see them. It's not like now where there'd be big screens and everything, and you could see them on the screen. They'd just be in the same room as them, screaming at them. That's the dream.
It's so weird, but
first stop on my time machine.
Totally. I would definitely go see him live. But I think the one I'd go to would be the rooftop gig.
Totally, yeah.
Oh, yeah. The final
one.
Yeah.
That was in London, was it? I guess you're going to tell us about that anyway. Mm-hmm. For some reason, I was thinking it was in New York, but that makes sense.
London, I'm pretty sure. And they play Get Back about 8 times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's a film from different angles, yeah.
Ah, so it was all pretty much just a big stunt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, right. I'm sure Jess will tell us more about that as we go on. So what year are we in now?
We are 66. And we're up to The Beatles, which is frequently called the White Album. Okay, and that's sort of where it definitely shows their changing in styles. So the riffs were artistic. Lennon was moving towards brutal confessionals. McCartney was leaning towards pop melodies. Harrison immersed himself in Eastern spirituality. And Lennon drew closer to his wife-to-be, Yoko Ono. Right, so,
Yoko Ono. Damn, I was going to say that exact little
bit. Yeah, sorry, Dave. I felt you doing that. Hey, I was just remembering another TISM fact with them and the Beatles. Their last album was also a white album, and it was pretty much just looked the same as the white album, only it was called the White Album, spelled with an N at the end. They're like, well, it's not quite... It's, it's like the Beatles, but it's not. Like,
not
everything
quite
is sort
good.
Of, yeah.
No, just a little fun fact here, because Lennon and Yoko Ono's two virgins album, which is the full frontals, full frontal nudity on the back covers, front and back covers. Full frontal nudity. I've read that very strangely. It was released the same month as the White Album and stirred up so much outrage that the LP had to be sold wrapped in brown paper. And the Beatles went to number one. Two Virgins peaked at a number 124.
Oh, I imagine that you would think that you'd have enough clout to get the top 10 that people would want to hear what you and your lover or whatever are working on. But 120, wow.
Yeah,
and that was their only double album as well, I think, was it? The White Album?
Yeah.
And I was like, just had heaps of crazy ideas on it, right?
Yeah.
That's the one with like Revolution, where he just got number nine.
Another Tism thing. Oh, that always reminds me of The Simpsons. Together.
Oh, what's that?
Remember when they're number eight?
Oh,
he just burps, the whole Barney just burps.
Yeah, that's right. And he's wearing like a
number eight
turtleneck or something.
Yeah, and she orders a drink in a hat.
Oh, yes, I would have a...
Shit, what is it, with a plum?
It's a plum floating in a...
Served in a man's hat.
And he just whips it out. Yeah. Here you go.
That's great. Sorry, it is in fact.
Well, no, I just don't know if I might not have got this at the time, but it was... because I don't think I knew about that Revolution number 9 or whatever it was. But they had a song and the chorus went, number 9, number 9, number 9, number 9. Your meal is ready.
Oh, that's great.
So great. Okay.
And, I have people out there, TISM, it stands for This Is Serious Mum.
Yeah.
So, what
a this is over. This is kind of becoming the Beatles /TISM episode.
I like it. No.
We're learning about the Australia's greatest act as well as the UK's greatest act.
Mm. Yeah, exactly. So now we're up to 68, a great year. This is where...
Have you said that about every year?
Yeah, I have.
They're all great. They're just getting better.
They are great. I wasn't alive for them, but I assume they were great. This is where relations between the Beatles were getting a bit not good.
So that was great.
Yeah, it was a great year. Ringo Starr quit for 2 weeks, stormed out. So so McCartney jumped on the drums for back in the USSR. They all sort of took turns in a way. Oh, and Dear Prudence, he was drumming as well. Lennon had lost interest in collaborating with McCartney, whose contribution on Obla-Di-Obla-Da, he scorned as granny music shit. So... Great song, though.
Thanks, John.
Yeah. So it wasn't going very well, and tensions were further aggravated by Lennon's romantic preoccupation with the avant-garde artist Yoko Ono. He insisted on bringing her to sessions despite the group's well-established understanding that girlfriends were not allowed in the studio.
Imagine the awkward look. Mm. Like you're singing into a microphone, just looking at her like...
I hate you.
Oh, bloody. Oh, bloody. Just looking
the
at
her with
hate. Sounds like she was a real Yoko Ono to the group.
Yeah. And in fact, that's where the phrase was born. Oh, it's not a coincidence. Is that her name?
Yeah.
Oh. Now, this is where Lennon later described recording this album. He was like, every track is an individual track. There isn't any Beatles music on it. It's John and the band, Paul and the band, George and the band.
Right.
Ringo on holiday.
Because he bailed. And McCartney, a bit nicer, just recalled that the album wasn't a pleasant one to make. So they're not very happy.
Is this the White Album we're talking about?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and this is sort of where they've identified that these recording sessions as the start of the band's breakup. So they attempted to smooth over their differences in early 1969 at filmed recording sessions. So the idea, I think, was to make a film, but when the project fell apart hundreds of hours of studio time later, no one could face editing the tapes. It was like, oh, this is crap, we can't do it.
Brutal.
Eventually, a record producer, Phil Spector, did it.
Look at him now.
Yeah.
Look at him now.
So that was sort of the footage that was used for Let It Be, which is essentially a documentary of their breakup, which includes the impromptu January 30th, 1969 rooftop concert at the Apple Corps headquarters, which was their last public performance as the Beatles. Again, parodied by The Simpsons.
That's right. Wearing the same outfits and everything in the video.
So
The Simpsons. It's great.
I've learned so much from The Simpsons.
That was the B sharps, right?
Yeah.
B sharps.
Number 8. Which is funny because Barney was like the Lennon. You know, really?
Yeah, he definitely was. Yeah.
So would that have made Homer the Paul?
I think Homer would have been the Paul.
Must have been.
Because he was like he was writing tunes on the piano.
Yeah,
and
writing
stuff.
Songs.
Yeah,
yeah,
you're right. And then who else was in the band? Apu.
Apu.
And.
Well, Chief Wiggum was replaced by Barney, and Principal Skinner was the fourth
Principal
member.
Skinner, that's it. So I reckon Principal Skinner was the Ringo or the George. Anyway.
Only they were a barbershop quartet for some reason.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
They were great. Hello, my baby. Hello, my darling. Anyway. So they were trying to sort of smooth things over. It didn't go very well. They split up. They've gone their separate ways. Bye-bye, Beatles. And then for years...
So what year was this?
70.
1970. So they've released two more albums, right? Abbey yeah. Road and then Let It Be is their last...
Yeah.
But they were recorded... I'm pretty sure they were recorded in the reverse order.
Yeah, that's right. Let It Be was... Abbey Road's the last recorded one, but then...
But released
Which
before.
Is probably my favourite album. It's a cracker, but... Yeah, that's the crazy... Like, often bands, when they fall apart, it's not usually when they're still making... awesome stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It's like, oh, hey guys, just about. We're a bit shit now.
Yeah, yeah. And then they go their separate ways. But they were still doing well. They just weren't getting along. Mm. And they all kind of went on to do individual stuff, like solo careers, and they collaborated with each other quite a bit during their solo stuff. Even though they didn't necessarily get along, you wouldn't really get all four of them together, but, you know, they'd appear on each other's solo stuff. So there was always speculation that they would get back together. What do you think ended those speculations?
Lennon in 1980.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were about to say Lennon made another comment. No, I don't.
No,
I know.
He, a disturbed fan, murdered him. That famous photo of Lennon and Yoko Ono where they're lying on the ground and he's naked and like spooning her, but not really spooning.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That famous photo. That was taken the day that he was murdered. Did you know that?
I did not know that was the day.
It was taken that morning by famous photographer Annie Leibovitz.
She's still going?
Yep. It was supposed to just be him, but he insisted that Yoko Ono was in it. And Annie was kind of like, She was kind of
It's pretty
like,
hard to say no.
Yeah, and she sort of had to guarantee. She's like, yeah, all right, I reckon I can get it onto the cover for you. Because it was John Lennon, she's like, all right, I guess they'll just have to take it. Little did she know that later that night, Mark David Chapman had travelled to New York a couple of months earlier with the intention to murder John Lennon, but changed his mind and returned home to Honolulu.
Oh, my God.
He's a Hawaiian guy. Come on.
What? And then he was like, I probably won't murder him. And he went home.
He went home. This is a few months earlier. And then he's come back on that day in October, December, sorry. He earlier in the day, he asked Lennon for an autograph. And then he just waited outside the Dakota.
Did he get the autograph?
Yeah, he did. And apparently they chatted a little bit.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Right? And then he waited outside the Dakota, which is the building that Lennon lived in. And when Lennon returned home, Chapman fired 5 bullets from about 3 meters away. 2 of the bullets hit him in the back and 2 more in the shoulder. Now, this is really strange. It's funny, actually, that it's not funny at all. The surgeons said that even if he'd been shot while on the operating table surrounded by doctors, they could not have saved him. There's no way he was going to survive.
Just really good shots.
Great shots.
Pretty sure I remember hearing that an ambulance or the car that ever drove him to the hospital, he'd get in the car and someone said, are you John Lennon?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty weird. It's weird as well.
Isn't that you've seen John Lennon die? Wow.
Yeah. Well, okay, and this is strange. The surgeons noted, as did other witnesses, that at the moment Lennon was pronounced dead, all my loving came over the hospital sound system.
Oh, my God.
So one of their songs played the moment that he was pronounced dead.
Odds are that's going to happen. One of their songs.
That's true. Yeah. They were still pretty big.
I'd like to point out that's a Paul song.
Bit brutal. Yeah.
Well, it's a Lennon McCartney.
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah, yeah.
That was in the days where they were still collaborating, right?
That's a McCartney Lennon. Thank you very much. Yeah, exactly. According to Paul.
Exactly. So,
that is true. I mean, he's not a great guy, but still terrible that he got murdered.
Do you think there was any chance that they might have got back together if he did kick on?
I don't know. Probably not. I don't think they...
None of them need the money. That's usually the thing.
The Stones don't need the money. They're still...
No, but they haven't broken up. They just obviously each other.
Right.
Yeah, it's hard to speculate, isn't it? I feel like Lennon and McCartney's relationship was never very good after. But what's interesting, like we say, okay, Lennon doesn't seem like the nicest guy, but his death triggered the most amazing outpouring of grief around the world on this unprecedented scale. So his remains were cremated and there was no funeral. And there was this crowd outside her home just chanting and singing his songs. And she sort of sent word to them that they were keeping her awake because they were just standing out on the street all the time, just grieving. So she asked that they reconvene at Central Park the following Sunday for a 10 minutes of silent prayer. So on the 14th of December 1980, millions of people around the world responded to Ono's request to pause for 10 minutes of silence to remember John Lennon. So 30,000 gathered in Liverpool, the largest group, over 225,000 in Central Park, all gathered together. And for those 10 minutes, every radio station in New York City went off the air.
Wow.
That's a pretty big reach for a musician's death. Like, that impact is incredible. Well, that's a good one to sort of start to wrap up with, isn't it? Mm. And then John Lennon died.
And where are they now?
Yeah. They've done heaps of stuff.
Yeah, they've all done some good things.
Yeah, they have. And, like, I wanted to go into their solo stuff as well, but there's just still so much.
Yeah.
Like, they all did a lot. I think Paul McCartney did a lot with Wings, and George Harrison did a lot of stuff. And
Traveling Wilburys.
They've done too much.
That's right. Roy Orbison got the last laugh there. He got to come back, yeah.
And Ringo Starr voiced the Fat Controller. So they've all got stuff going on.
They've all done stuff.
I think they all had... Did they all have number one singles? I don't know about Ringo. I think they all did, Ringo.
I think you might
be right. You're 16... You're beautiful, and you're mine. He must have been in his 30s when that came out. That's weird. I don't know if that was a hit or not.
Do you reckon he still performs it live in his 70s?
Probably. Yeah. It's creepy now.
If it was a hit, I'm sure
he probably just sings, you're 60.
Ugh.
Yeah. Oh, man, there's so... Like, how much... Like you said, there's just too much.
There's too much. Yeah, that's it. It was getting too ridiculous. So... I just found a few little details. I've got some fun facts, and I've got a list of all the awards that they've won.
Oh, perfect.
So we'll finish on a high just to wrap up how huge they are. So they released 27 studio albums.
Really?
55 singles.
That's crazy.
That's a lot. And 4 live albums.
Sure, 27 studio albums in 10 years. That can't be right.
But that's because they had in the UK.
And they probably changed it.
I think it was there's 10 albums in the UK, I think.
Yeah. Right.
That's still pretty crazy. One a year for 10 years.
Well, because they only released them over 8 years.
Yeah, that's right. So, and it's like, no wonder they fell apart. Like, if normally bands now will release an album every 2 years, tour in between, have a break.
Yeah.
If you're never having a break from each other, it's tour, recording. Like, my best friends, I don't think I'd be able to handle doing that with.
Nah, too much.
Are we going to record another 3 of these today?
Oh, God, no.
Then tour.
Here's just a few little fun facts. Or do I do awards or fun facts first?
Do awards. I want to finish with fun facts.
Yeah, fun facts.
But I don't know how fun they are. But
they're
okay,
totally
let's
building
a go.
This up to be super fun.
I know. I don't know how fun they're going to be.
Super
awards.
Fun facts.
The film Let It Be, so the 1970 film, won the 1971 Academy Award for Best Original Song Score.
I didn't know that.
The Beatles have been awarded 6 diamond albums, as well as 24 multi-platinum albums, 39 platinum albums, 45 gold albums in the United States. They're also the recipients of 7 Grammy Awards. in the UK, the Beatles have 4 multi-platinum awards, 4 platinum, 8 gold, and 1 silver. They were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1988. They are the best-selling band in history. They've sold between 600 million and over 1 billion units worldwide. In 2004, Rolling Stone ranked the Beatles as the best artist of all time. They ranked number 1 on Billboard magazine's list of the all-time most successful Hot 100 artists. And as of 2014, they hold the record for most number 1 hits on the Billboard Hot 100 with 20. Isn't that ridiculous?
20 number ones.
They were collectively included in Time magazine's compilation of the 20th century's 100 most influential people. And in 2014, they received the Grammy Lifetime Achievement Award. I know we all quite like them, but for even people who don't, you can't argue that they're huge.
I reckon there are a few out there but you know, anyone who's huge like that, there's always people who are like, I don't get it.
Totally.
It's like, if they weren't so big, they'd be like, yeah, they're pretty good. But I don't get why they're so big.
Yeah.
I've got friends who just don't get it at all.
I think if I discovered them now, I probably wouldn't be that into them. I think because my parents listened to them a lot and I was kind of raised with their music, you appreciate it. And
That was probably true of me too, perhaps. Yeah. And it's a great story as well.
Yeah.
Like that Lennon thing. Is it ever going to... Surely a big budget movie should be made about it at some point.
Surely. And it probably will. So yeah,
big
that's...
budget, Dave. I'm not talking about some mid-level budget.
You're talking 100 million plus.
Easily.
Plus.
Okay, some fun facts to finish up.
Oh my goodness, I'm so excited for some fun facts.
Your favourite song, Dave, Yesterday.
Yes.
Is the most covered version of any song ever written. It's the most covered song.
I knew that because I'm a big fan.
It's a great song.
It's multiple thousands, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
What?
Yeah, it's insane.
Is it? I don't remember hearing... Oh, I know Boyz II Men do a cover of it on their album Boyz II Men 2.
Back in the boys.
Boyz II
Men. Oh, Jess.
Back in the boys. And I'm pretty sure Yesterday, that's the one that he claims that he wrote in a dream.
Yesterday.
Ah.
And he came up with the...
Yeah, yeah.
He woke up and he would be like,
he was singing
something scrambled,
scrambled
eggs.
He was singing scrambled eggs.
Honey,
just
how
to
I
himself.
Like your legs.
Yeah, yeah, just so that he would remember the tune. While he ran to write it down.
And a guy on a pie came to
him.
Yeah, yeah. I know. It's
these
one of
those
stories.
Oh, boy. Mm. Paul McCartney's name isn't Paul, it's James.
Really?
Is Paul a middle name?
Paul's his middle name.
James Paul.
James Paul.
I did not know that.
Oh, no, that's a good one. There are
He's
around...
also dead. Did you get across that at all? There's this big conspiracy theory
Paul
that he died
dead.
in the 60s.
Have you heard that?
No,
and
I haven't.
There's like a replacement Paul.
I actually haven't heard that. How funny.
And that's why on the cover of Abbey Road, he's the only one not wearing shoes.
That's part of the proof for them.
That's one of the claims.
It's not just that he just wasn't wearing shoes.
But also...
all these clues
that's
apparently.
I think George is... dressed in a denim suit, so that means he's the undertaker. No, he's the. I think because he's wearing denim, he's the one who buried him. One of them,
and because he's not facing the camera as much as the others, so it's not the real Paul.
Isn't Lennon in a white suit?
Yeah, that's because he's something as well. Yeah, yeah, and then there's this other thing. That in one of their tracks, if you play it backwards, it sounds like Paul is no more, or something. It's not even, it's like, why wouldn't they say it? Say the exact words, Paul's dead. Like, why are all the clues are so vague?
Oh, that's great. I choose to believe
Paul's
he's alive.
I think he definitely is.
Yeah.
Well, the fact
he just had a hit song with Rihanna last year.
I was going to say, yeah.
But he's still writing hits.
Oh, God. There are there's a couple more fun facts. There are around 70 famous and not so famous people on the cover of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, including Mae West, Edgar Allan Poe, Bob Dylan, Stuart Sutcliffe.
Oh, that's cool.
Little shout out to
their
fallen bass player. Marilyn Monroe, Laurel and Hardy, Karl Marx, Oscar Wilde, Lewis Carroll, Albert Einstein, all on the front of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Do you know
it's
that?
It's a cool cover.
It's a pretty
I
cool
didn't
cover.
Know that.
But yeah, I wouldn't even think to look. In an early interview, George Harrison let slip that he liked jelly babies.
Whoopsies.
Consequently, he was pelted with them at gigs for years afterwards. This could be painful, especially in America where jelly babies weren't available, so fans threw harder jelly beans instead.
Oh my God.
Isn't that great?
He's like, stop.
I don't
stop.
Like them that league. Much. Yeah. And the last one, this is probably one of my favorite facts that I've learnt. The band bought the Greek island of Leslo, surrounded by four smaller islands, one for each Beatle, for £95,000 in the summer of 1967. They sold it a few months later, bored with the idea.
Oh my God, I never knew that. It's awesome.
They bought a Greek island.
They bought an
island. Surrounded by four little ones so they could have an island each.
I love a band was going to buy
bored with the idea.
An island.
I love that though because like 67, they're still in their 20s. Like, they're so young. They're just, they're young guys with too much money.
And they own an island.
Did you know this? Just to drag one more fun fact out. That George funded The Life of Brian, the Monty Python.
The movie, yes.
I'd forgotten that.
And I'm fairly sure that he risked a lot of his money.
I think it was pretty much everything he had.
Like, all in.
And he didn't, and I don't think Monty Python realized.
Because they would have assumed that, oh, he's a Beatle.
Yeah, exactly. So they were like... They didn't feel as much pressure as they would have. They've said since they're like, oh my God, if we knew that George Harrison would have gone bankrupt based on this. Because they were worried that the movie, apparently the movie to them wasn't looking great and it wasn't getting great a great reception until they really finished it off with the music and everything.
Yeah.
And then it was obviously a big hit that made a lot of money. Oh.
But maybe it's better they didn't know.
I think it definitely it's was definitely better they didn't know. Yeah.
Be pretty stressed out.
I think Life of Brian might be my favourite. I think
I just love how
the
Beatles reaches just everywhere.
Yeah. So I hope you learned something. I definitely did.
Yeah, I did
too. I hope that was interesting for you.
It was very interesting.
Good, good.
Hopefully, yeah, I feel like now I just want to go home and listen to their back catalogue again.
Yeah, I want to watch their movies.
Yeah, I haven't seen any of them. Let's get them out on the...
Yeah.
We could talk about this after the podcast.
No.
We should watch it at the back.
But if you say it now, then I'm contractually obliged to agree and come and watch it with you.
Well, there you go. Thanks, Jess, for educating us about all things Beatles.
Thank you. I hope you enjoyed it.
We have all come down with a case of Beatlemania. Am I right, everyone?
Big time.
Big time.
Well, we'll be back next week with a fresh report on another topic. And until then, we say adieu and a goodbye. Or I say hello.
Thank you. I was going to say that. You say goodbye, and I say hello.
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 Don't know why you say goodbye, I say
Yoko
hello.
Yoko is definitely going to put a stop to this podcast.
Oh, absolutely.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.